welcome to the American Football Show, powered by EP Sports. EP Sports is the top supplier in the UK for all your American football needs, helping players and coaches reach their potential since 2007. Check them out at epsports.co.uk. I'm here with Joe, Tim and Craig, and tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the draft, and we've also got a great interview for you with our friend Ollie. But let's move on to some news. Some schedules have been released for at least two leagues. Let's move on to what we most recently talked about, which would be the European League of Football. Joe, have you got the schedule up there?
I do. I've got it here. So there appears to be 12 weeks. I believe it's two bye weeks for each team. The first game is, I don't know whether it's gone European mode, where it's got the home team first and the away team second, or if it's American. That's the only thing. So the opening game is the Barcelona Dragons and the Stuttgart Surge. And then the other games are the, is it Warclaw? However you pronounce it. Tim had a really good pronunciation last time. So the Panthers against the Cologne Centurions, Hamburg Sea Devils against Frankfurt Galaxy, and the Berlin Thunder against the Leipzig King. So they're the opening games. And
what date is that?
What date is that? Very, very good question. That is Saturday the 19th of June. So Ryan Heat is
that's not too far off, is it? That's this year?
Literally a couple months. Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. So cool.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to be watching that, you know.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's Saturday and Sundays. You can't beat it. It's perfect for us.
Yeah, and it's European time, so it's not going to be. And we're before Europe, so it's actually going to be a little bit better for us.
Yep.
So you get
another league's just so exciting.
Not knowing anything about German geography, because the games are on Saturday and the Sunday, if you went for away for a weekend, you could get two games in.
It's very true.
Unless Leipzig and Stuttgart are miles away from each other, and it's impossible. I don't know.
I think Cologne and Berlin aren't too. No, it might be Cologne and Dortmund. I can't remember.
I feel like Frankfurt is in the same country as Berlin, so they should be near each other.
Hamburg is near Munich. No.
But they haven't got a team, though, so that's an alpha.
Good point. That's a good point. Oh, God.
The NFL schedule is also due to release soon. Is this correct?
May time.
We know everyone knows who they're playing. It's just the exact order, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a feeling that Patriots-Buccaneers game is going to be either an opener or put around like an interesting time of the season. It's going to be one of the two.
But you've got no relation to the Bucs, except they have your entire team from 3 years ago.
Yeah, about that. And then they have those horrible owners who try to ruin football in the midweek. So less said about that, the better.
Are we really going to be going on to some Super League in an American football podcast?
No, I'd rather not. I'd rather leave it. Emotions were very high on Monday.
Oh, yeah, that was a mental couple of days, that, mate. I didn't know what was happening. Like,
as a completely external, like, watcher of the entire thing, it was very interesting.
It was mayhem. Like, the whole of Parliament agreed. Just like when's that happened? Like that's how like major a thing it was. Everyone sort of kept together.
It surprised me how unanimously sort of against the idea the majority of people I sort of either read or spoke to or seen, because it was sort of everywhere you went, people talking about it.
No one was giving it the general consensus.
No one wanted it. Like,
no. It was a stupid idea for a start. That's why.
Yeah.
Money.
Sport here, it's just such a different. I know it was the American owners, and American sport is great in its own intensity, but English sport's just it's different. It's just built in working class towns, whereas franchises are over in America, where the money's made. There was just a complete clash of culture there, basically.
Yeah, I had me thinking, if I don't support Liverpool, who am I going to support? I was looking up like Marine FC season tickets and stuff, and was gonna go that way. So I can't support Everton. That's a local team. Like,
nah, I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean that me and Craig's group chats, what, like 60 Liverpool fans and then two Villa fans. So it's just this, oh, Villa top of the league.
It's got quite a good mix in there. I think it's Chelsea fan, Arsenal fan. There's quite a mix.
Right, and there's also been quite a lot of rule changes to talk about. The main one is the jersey numbers. Whilst that has probably the least impact on the game, it's what everyone's excited about, because obviously a lot of players are going to get back to their college numbers. Who wants to go over the jersey changes?
I'll do the rules. Just I'll go through them all. There's only six of them, really quickly. First one, I didn't even know there was, but there'll be no longer be overtime in preseason games. How stupid is that to have overtime in preseason games? Second one, you can have a maximum number of players, 9, on the setup zone for a kickoff. So now you know they're not allowed a run-up. You can have 9 players maximum on that line. Replay officials can now provide extra help to refs without a challenge. They can tell them if they've missed something. The one next one, enforcement of penalties on extra points and 2-point conversions. Apparently, it's just a change to the word into the existing law, so it doesn't really matter. Next one, add a loss of down to a second forward pass penalty. Previously, it used to be a 5-yard penalty, so now you lose dots as well. So the most important one to everyone really is jersey numbers. So these are the changes. Quarterback stays the same, numbers 1 to 19. Running back can now have numbers 1 to 49, 80 to 89. A tight end can now have 1 to 49, 80 to 89. A wide receiver, 1 to 49, 80 to 89. O-lines, D-lines stay the same. Linebackers, 1 to 59, 90 to 99. And DBs, 1 to 49. So there's a lot of players now can change numbers. A lot of them used to wear single-digit numbers in college. If they change their number this year, they have to buy up the existing stock of replica jerseys. So I think a lot of players won't change their number this year, but will wait and change it next year because that will cost them a lot of money.
But then, like, is how much stock of each player? Like, would it cost? How much would it cost JJ Watt to change his number, and how much would it cost Nathan Peterman to change his number?
So I remember a few years ago, I can't even remember who it was. Some player said to another player when they came to a team, can I have my old jersey number? And the other one said, yeah, that's fine. But then was told by the team, that's fine, but your old number, you've got to buy all the existing stock. And they told him how much it was. And he went, oh, no, that's fine. I'll keep the number I've got. So it'll cost a lot.
I wonder if that's why, because you do hear about like newly drafted players, or like Tom Brady, for example, when he's the Bucks, he needed number 12. So I think whoever it was, I don't know who it was, but they offered it's Tom Brady. But you do see some players, they have to buy their number from like a rookie that just took it by accident, and they can make some money out of it.
I'm guessing part of that is buying up all the
their
jersey.
But and that third rule, I think that's more vital than just we're skipping over, because replay officials can now help. Is that going to kind of stop all questions of, oh, they didn't throw a flag, so they can't review it? Just, am I reading that wrong? Are they now going to oh, no, there was a really clear head-to-head contact there?
It's not on every single play, I don't think, because there was talk of the sky judge, the sky referee, but this one doesn't quite go that far. Obviously, a lot of it's in the wording, and I'm trying to find...
Yeah. I was quite when I read that there, I was a little concerned, only because like VAR, they check everything.
I was waiting for that to come out,
and it's crap, like, because it's just too much. I like the challenge thing, but you're right. They're in some circumstances where they can't throw the flag. It was in I can't remember the exact circumstance, but it was the Chiefs against the Browns, wasn't it? With the helmet to helmet, and the ball ended up going across the end of the end zone. Yeah, because the Browns, they couldn't challenge, or they didn't challenge. I can't remember what it was.
They couldn't challenge it because it was just a missed head-to-head contact.
Yeah, so this is where this would come in handy, I'm assuming.
So these are the things that the replay official can provide certain objective information to on-field officials. Possession of the ball, completed or incomplete pass, touching of a loose ball, boundary line, goal line or end line, spot of the ball / player in relation to sidelines, line of scrimmage, line to gain or goal line, down by contact when not ruled down on the field.
Ah, so it's pretty much live ball, dead ball, stuff like that.
Yeah, that sort of thing, I think.
Okay, so it's not going to have too much of an effect.
So they're not going to be able to, like, referee runs down the field and then 5 minutes later it's like, oh, by the way, that was pass interference.
Also, why are they changing? Like, I get the change the second forward pass for also down. I think that's an interesting way of dealing with it. But they need to deal with, I can't remember which defensive penalty it is, but the one that gives them an automatic first down. Because sometimes it's like 3rd and 25, they're like, excellent. We can just hold the sticks. And then I think it's face mask, maybe, or something like that. And it's automatic first down, despite than maybe getting 5 yards in the play. And I think that just ruins some games.
I think the way it works is a team has to say, we propose this change. So it isn't someone, Roger Goodell doesn't sit there with a committee and go, right, let's have a look at all these rules, which I'm like, a team has to go, right, for some reason they're concerned with the double forward pass rule, and then they change it. So it just seems a bit of a bizarre way of doing it.
When you get told it's all like, rule changed by the Baltimore Ravens.
Make it up on the fly, like the talk rule.
There's a couple of... The two big rules that teams are trying to push, which interestingly enough, is the Eagles and the Ravens. It's that instead of an onside kick, it's like a 4th and 25 or something. And it's like basically if you get the pass, you get it. If you don't, you've screwed it. But that's just going to get shot down for so long. But it just sounds so fun.
They tried it last year, didn't they?
In a preseason, I think, yeah.
It's a bit like when you ask your mum for something, your mum says, yeah, I'll have a think about it. So they've said, yeah, we're not going to reject that. We'll think about it. That's basically what's happened to that one. It's too sensible to be passed.
Okay, so that is all the news for this week. We're now going to show you our fantastic interview that we had with Ollie, where we talk about the Tafts mock draft and some of the players you may not have heard about and some of the players you will have heard about. Joining us today is special guest Ollie Hodgkinson. He's an NFL draft analyst for Pro Football Network. He's 1/3 of the College Chaps podcast, and he's a contributor for The Touchdown. And we have him on to discuss the upcoming draft, which is only 1 week away. Very exciting. And we have some questions for you. Thank you for coming on, Ollie.
No, absolutely no problem at all. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to getting into some NFL draft stuff with you guys tonight. Absolutely. Very much looking forward to it. 1 week away, like you say, it's... seems like it's been a long time coming.
And if anything, there's just not enough news about it right now. instead of just the usual who's your favourite player, all this kind of stuff, we've got a few different questions. But we did run a Tafts mock draft. Tim ran a Tafts mock draft, much to his chagrin. Some pretty interesting answers, some pretty unusual answers, if anything. But obviously, the main talking point of the draft is the top five quarterbacks. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence is the de facto number one quarterback. But kind of why, for example, is Mac Jones suddenly? Because I remember when we first started talking, I was like, he might creep into the first, but now he could be third overall. Why is Zach Wilson the 50th rated preseason quarterback, but now he's the second overall consensus? Like, let us know your insight on all these quarterbacks and all their stuff.
It's an interesting one. It starts with, let's be honest, it starts with supply and demand. I was saying this to someone the other day. I think, I certainly can't remember a time in the NFL where there was so much need for a quarterback, so much change around from the quarterback position. If you look at the season opener in 2020 and what we're likely to see in the 2021 season opener, the change in starting quarterbacks for those teams, it could be up to half of the NFL that has a new starting quarterback from the start of the 2021 league season. So firstly, I think with the quarterbacks, you can't escape the fact it's the most important position in the sport. There's a huge demand for it. And simply, it just boils down to teams are going to end up overreaching, I suppose, is the way to put it, for some guys who normally... I don't think you would see in the top end of the first round, and even in the bottom end of the first round. You alluded to Mac Jones. He's a guy who, when I first did my mock draft for Pro Football Network, my first one back in August, so we're on like 7 versions of this now from August, Mac Jones wasn't even a consideration. So I do a 4-round mock draft for Pro Football Network. He's nowhere on there. So he's obviously had an incredible season for Alabama. He's led them to the national championship. He's put up gaudy numbers. So naturally that creeps him up. And then San Francisco make this incredible trade with the Miami Dolphins. And the assumption is that they're going after a specific guy. So we know it's not going to be Trevor Lawrence. We know it's not going to be Zach Wilson. They're a team that desperately needs a starting quarterback, let's be honest. So you hear the term pro ready. And the feeling is that Mac Jones is the most pro-ready quarterback outside of Trevor Lawrence. even taking into account Zach Wilson. And what does it mean? What does pro ready mean? So he's smart, he's accurate, he doesn't make stupid decisions. He's a guy who can come in and command an offense. So that's the feeling that the 49ers really were sold on one guy, and that guy is going to be Mac Jones. Now, right, whether that's right or wrong, certainly from a skill perspective, it's not for me. I wouldn't call him the third best quarterback in the class. I wouldn't call Zach Wilson the third best quarterback in the class. For me, I think Justin Fields is. But I suppose it's a conversation we can have a little bit further down the line. But, oh, yes, there you go. Yes, now we're talking.
A man first, baseball pack, first card of football cards, I got Justin Fields.
For me, Justin Fields is the third best player in this class. He's the second best quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence. But, you know, going back to Mac Jones, the assumption he's going to be there, he's going to be the quarterback for San Francisco. San Francisco 49ers was a solid assumption for a good week or two. Seems like there's a bit of 50-50 about it now. The skill set maybe that you would want in an NFL quarterback isn't completely there. He hasn't got the strongest arm. He's shown that through the season. He's showed it very much so at his pro day. He's not a guy who's athletic. He's not going to be elusive in the pocket. He's not going to make plays with his legs. He's got some functional mobility, but he's not a guy who is going to come in and set you on fire like a Justin Fields is going to do. So your point about Zach Wilson, you mentioned top 50 there. I think one guy had Zach Wilson as his 50 rated quarterback, and you look at the list of quarterbacks that was put together, and some of the guys that are in front of him, you just look at and go, not a chance, not even before this season, but Zach Wilson's had. And it boils down to Zach Wilson played injured last year. He wasn't fantastic last year. He didn't light the world on fire. By last year, I mean 2019. But he had some great games, USC, Tennessee, led BYU to wins over Power 5 programs. So there's a little talent there. But he's just been a completely different animal this season. Just flashy, you know, he's exciting. He's what you want to see in a quarterback, what you want to see in the NFL. You want to see exciting plays. You want to see quarterbacks escaping the pocket and running downfield. You want to see big throws. You just want to see excitement. And that's what you've got from Zach Wilson this year. And his buzz has built steadily through the year to the point where the New York Jets were clearly falling in love with him early. Late February, early March time. It's been kind of a signed, sealed, delivered. Zach Wilson is the New York Jets' future. And the only question mark there was whether they kept Sam Darnold on and there'd be a competition, or whether Sam Darnold would mentor him. And I honestly don't think that was ever a question that actually needed an answer to, because I think the Jets fell in love with Zach Wilson. They saw him at Pro Day. And they're like, that's a guy that's going to lead our offense. And I just hope for Zach Wilson, because he's a guy that I do really like to watch. I hope the Jets don't fail him in the same way that Sam Darnold did. And they've got plenty of possibilities and plenty of options in the draft to ensure that they don't fail him.
So when go on.
Do you think with Zach Wilson, it helps he actually played last season, didn't opt out and played more games than some of the other guys? Because obviously, if you look at, say, Trey Lance, for example, he's played one game and it wasn't a very good game. So he hasn't got the tape that other players have got. Justin Fields, if you haven't watched it, it's on YouTube. You can watch the whole game. Watch the College Football Championship semi-final against Clemson, where he played, he got injured. It was a dirty hit. The guy who actually hit him got ejected from the game, and he carried on playing in obvious pain. So I will bang the table as well as I can for Justin Fields. I always have. So watch that game if you haven't. But I just think it's such a weird year this year with the lack of a season last term for picking quarterbacks. And I'm as mystified as anyone about Mac Jones. Don't get it.
Yeah, I'm gone, sorry.
So I think when you have a season like Mac Jones did, in terms of lead a team to a national championship, put all those Gordy numbers, you know, like I said before, smart, accurate, that sort of thing, kind of people get carried away with. And you forget that Justin Fields was incredible in 2019. He's been incredible and, like you say, tough, strong. He can make all the throws. He's got everything about him that you want and need in an NFL quarterback in the modern day. I will bang the drum for Justin Fields too.
And so my theory is there's two kind of different fields when you're drafting. You've got the if he's your franchise quarterback, absolutely do whatever you can to go get him. And there's also the just get the best player available. With the 49ers, I think are in this situation because, like you mentioned, the first two picks are all, nearly almost locks. Is it a case of, because you mentioned the second, there's another player in between the top two quarterbacks. I'm having a hunch it's Penei Sewell. Mm-hmm. But yes, so do you think it's a case of with kind of Trey Lance, who's, yeah, he could be amazing. And there's, and let's say Kyle Shanahan goes, Mac Jones is my guy. He's the guy who can lead him, but he has got all these little flaws. He's not going to be the top end of everything. Do you fall more in that just take the best player, or do you think even if it's a risk, take that quarterback?
It's an interesting one with the 49ers because you look at two different years. You look at a year that Jimmy Garoppolo led them to a Super Bowl and a year where, you know, I'm glad you said it. But the theory is that any quarterback can come in and lead that Shanahan offense. And I'm not quite so sold on that theory. I think what people are overlooking is the relationship that Kyle Shanahan already has with Justin Fields, where they say that Mac Jones is the nailed on pick. Shanahan's already got a relationship with Justin Fields. Justin Fields is part of the quarterback collective, which is Shanahan's a massive part of. So he's got previous experience dealing with Justin Fields. He can come in, he can run that offense straight away. I think with Trey Lance, you are looking at a guy, rightly or wrongly, the league is going to think he probably will need a season sat behind someone, which is why he didn't fall into number four in Atlanta makes sense, because he's probably got another year or two out of Matt Ryan. And Trey Lance can sit, learn from Matt Ryan next year, 2 years if necessary, like Jordan Love might do behind Aaron Rodgers, and just learn some more elements of the game that, you know, he is a young player. And don't get me wrong, Trey Lance, again, he's a guy who's got cannon for an arm. His unbelievable ability to make plays with his legs. I watched a lot of FCS football and watched North Dakota State over the years with Easton Stick and with Trey Lance, and Trey Lance is a different beast, but he could just use that year sat behind someone like Matt Ryan. So I think it makes perfect sense for that landing spot for him. And for the San Francisco 49ers, I think Justin Fields is the one that makes the sense, whatever way you try and argue that Mac Jones is the one for them.
I was reading an article today about Justin Fields. It came out about him having epilepsy, and they were making a big deal about that. Do you think that'll impact his draft stock at all, or do you think it's with the, if he can manage it with medication and it's not that big of an issue, then it won't affect his stock at all?
I think it's he's clearly been able to play college football for the past 2 years as a full-time starter for Ohio State. It's never been a problem in his high school career. It's never been a problem when he was backing up Jake Fromm at Georgia. Other NFL players have come out and said that they have been able to play with it, something that they've grown out of. So I don't foresee it being an issue. It's the time of year where everything comes out of the woodwork. Terrace Marshall, wide receiver out of LSU, there's medical things now apparently popping up from the Indianapolis medical checks. So you're going to hear all sorts of things about players. Some are more serious than others. And I think there doesn't appear to be, from anyone that's associated with Justin Fields, any even slight inkling that that's affected his ability to play the game of football through college. And if that's the case, why should it in the NFL?
Okay. And moving on to our second question we've got. So we've got players you feel are the most overrated.
How do you feel about Kyle Trask on this podcast?
We've got no big Florida fans.
Excellent. That's great news. So Kyle Trask for me is an absolute mystery. So we talk about Mac Jones being considered a first round prospect, and I don't think he is. I think he's probably in a normal year, he's a second round prospect. Kyle Trask is still getting talk from some media analysts of being a potential late first round, second round pick. And it blows my mind because, again, you come back to Mac Jones, gaudy statistics, statistics in 2020, led Florida extremely well. You know, Florida are in a position at one point where they could have been in the college football playoffs. They, you know, lost the final three games of the season, on the Marco Wilson shoe throw incident against LSU. Real big turning point in their season. But you look at Kyle Trask from an NFL perspective, and it's the same things as Mac Jones. The arm strength isn't there. Even less so than Mac Jones, the ability to do anything outside of the pocket. Mac Jones can move in the pocket like Tom Brady does. He can evade pressure in the pocket. He's not athletic. He's not super fast or mobile, but Mac Jones at least can be evasive in the pocket. Kyle Trask, there were games last year where Kyle Trask just stood there and got hit or ran back 10 yards and forced fumbles. The guy isn't it. And I just don't get the buzz around him. He's got a weak arm. You look at how Florida played without Kyle Pitts. Without that weapon, when Kyle Pitts was out injured, Kyle Trask just capitulated. And he couldn't lead the Florida team then. I think it was the LSU game and the shoe throw game. Trask had to make a throw late on to keep a drive going to put a Florida in with a chance of winning, and he couldn't do it. Well, you can't do that against what was a poor LSU team last year. How are you going to come in and do that in the NFL? I just don't get it with Kyle Trask. I think he's probably the most overrated player in this draft class as far as I'm concerned.
I was going to say, would you say it's just a case of a player playing for a big team with good weapons to just sort of carry him along the line, that just sort of put his rating up and up, but you just feel as if that's all it is to it?
Yeah, so yeah, it certainly is. I mean, you look, the statistics are great. He had a record-breaking year. But you look at Kyle Pitts is probably going to be the highest drafted tight end of all time. You look at Kadarius Toney is an incredible weapon. You look at some of the pieces on the offensive line who are emerging late in the process as potential mid and early round picks like Stone Forsythe for left tackle. There's a lot of help around Kyle Trask last year. And it just, as I said before, he didn't show that ability to lead a team. He's a fantastic story, don't get me wrong. The guy sat behind Deshaun Watson at high school. He hadn't started a game from his freshman high school year up until his junior year at Florida, where he came in to replace Felipe Franks, who was injured. So he's a great story. It's something to, go, wow, look what the guy can do. But in terms of what he can do in the NFL, I just don't get it. I'd rather have a guy like Davis Mills, Kellen Mond, which is unbelievable for me to say because I'm not a big Kellen Mond fan, but I would take Davis Mills, Kellen Mond, Jamie Newman. I'd take someone like Peyton Ramsey out of Northwestern over Kyle Trask. I feel that strongly about how overrated he is.
And so when we talk about quarterbacks that reproduce really well on a fantastic college team, it's a bit of an offshoot and a bit of a biased question, but what do you think of Jalen Hurts?
I think it'd be interesting to see what. So Jalen Hurts falls very much into the Zach Wilson kind of mold in terms of he's exciting to watch. He can make plays out of the pocket. He's creative. I think he'll win the. So today, was it today or yesterday? They said the Philadelphia Eagles are going to have a quarterback battle. Yeah, he's going to win that battle because what is it? Joe Flacco he's going against?
Yeah, the Elite Dragon.
No. So he's going to win that battle. Joe Flacco hasn't been able to win a quarterback battle since the Ravens won the Super Bowl or whenever it is. Don't get me started on Joe Flacco. But so yeah, Jalen Hurts, he's going to win. You watched last season. Jalen Hurts came in and he gave a spark. And that's what you want to see. You want a guy who can come in and give a spark to your offense. Yeah, it might not be perfect all the time, but he's creative, he's entertaining, he's exciting. He put a spark in that Philadelphia Eagles offense, which had been so poor.
Shit, yeah.
For want of a better word, all season. So, yeah, I like Jalen Hurts. And again, he's another guy with an interesting story.
Any other overrated players you think are getting mocked too high?
Yeah, Tutu Atwell, the wide receiver out of Louisville. So he was one of the big surprises out of Daniel Jeremiah's first mock draft. So there was a couple of guys in there, Tutu Atwell and Aaron Robinson, the corner out of UCF. And I get it. I get the allure with Tua Atwell. He's fast. He's a deep threat. He can take a jet sweep with his 21 mile an hour speed, whatever it is he's got. But he's weighed in for at the Louisville Pro Day, 144 pounds. Jeez. And we're talking about, and like, let's not get this, it's not a fair comparison, but the guy's 5'9" and Devontae Smith's what, 6'2", but we're knocking Devontae Smith for being a 166 pound wide receiver. And we've got a guy that's going to be potentially drafted in a, in the mid rounds who only weighs 144 pounds. The difference is it shows with Tutu Atwell. If you watch Tutu Atwell play, he gets knocked about at the line of scrimmage so often, and it's so easy to knock him off his routes that, yeah, he can be a deep threat, but in the NFL, you're going to have to get him down there. And this season, season before, quite a few drops creeping into his game. And I've seen people describe him as being sure-handed. You want to watch a few more Tutu Atwell games because the guy's made some really critical drops. And I hope I'm wrong, because I think it's great to see speedy wide receivers excelling in the game. But I just think if you're going to have a speedy wide receiver threat, you look at Anthony Schwartz out of Auburn. He's probably going to be one of the fastest players in this draft. And you can be more creative with him. He's more reliable. He's a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. And if you're looking at a guy just to be creative, you look at a guy like Amir Smith-Marset out of Iowa, who can do multiple things, has done multiple things in what is essentially a poor Iowa offense. So you want a gadget player, pick a guy like Smith-Marset. You want a speedy guy who can be a deep threat, pick someone like Anthony Schwartz. I just don't see the need for a Tutu Atwell. No disrespect to any Louisville fans.
Daniel Jeremiah is pretty... I noticed most years when his mock drafts come out, they're a bit random. But then when the draft actually comes around, you do see some of the odd picks he's hit on. So it's definitely something to watch.
The guy gets paid a lot of money for what he does for a reason. He's the best at it. But I just, you know, with Tutu Atwell, I don't see it. I don't think he's anywhere near the first round in his latest mock draft. Don't think he's anywhere near the top 50 on his big board. So, you know, opinions change, your evaluation process changes, you see more of a guy, you see more of guys that you like, and it shifts around. And I think with guys like Jeremiah and Peter Schrager, NFL Network, they're guys who are in touch with the league quite a lot. And the league's fickle. You know, it can be 1 minute someone in the NFL would say, look, Tutu Atwell's going to come in, he's going to be a star in the league. And then the next minute, it's changed. So they do flip-flop around, but some of it is, you know, information-driven from the league.
Okay, and kind of on the flip sides, who do you think's not going to go in the first round but can really hit off these sleeper picks for the later rounds, stuff like that?
Yeah, so we'll go into the later rounds, and we'll stick with wide receiver position, because a guy that I really, really like, who has been stuck, trapped in a terrible offense, is Josh Palmer, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. So he is 6'1". He's a big, big bodied threat at the wide receiver position, makes circus catches on the sideline. He's got a sure pair of hands. He gets knocked for not having particularly good long speed, but I think he's faster than a lot of people give him credit for. And like I say, he's been in an offense that has been just poor quarterback play out of Tennessee. And therefore, a lot of people look at numbers, and he's not a guy who's had, I think he's most productive season, he's had probably 500 yards, 4 or 5 touchdowns, something like that. I've not got the exact numbers written down, so I can't tell you the exact numbers, but it's somewhere in that ballpark. So he's not going to blow you away from a statistical standpoint, but he's got everything that you need to succeed in the NFL. And he showed that at the Senior Bowl. The guy went to the Senior Bowl as not someone that was really on the radar, particularly very much. And he, again, went up against some of the best cornerbacks that were down there in Mobile and proved how good he can be. I got a screenshot somewhere of him right on the sideline, 2 feet just in bounds, extended the guy. I mean, the length on the guy is incredible. And it's just those sort of things are what you want to see out of a big-bodied receiver in the NFL.
Sending notes to Howie Roseman.
You're not fast enough for the Eagles, I don't think. You'll end up with 2-2 Atwell.
Oh, God. That is going to happen as well, just because you said it. but yeah, how about moving away from the wide receivers? Because it is, from what I've heard, a very deep draft for the wide receivers and the O-line.
Yeah, super deep on both positions, especially where you reference the O-line, especially the offensive tackle position. Just want to talk very quickly about offensive lineman Kendrick Green from Illinois, and then we'll chuck a defensive guy in there as well. So Kendrick Green was a defensive tackle at high school, an extremely productive defensive tackle as well. You're talking 111 tackles, 36 tackles for loss, that's sort of productive at the defensive tackle position. Represented the USA at under 19 level at the World Championships in China. So we're talking a guy who wasn't too shabby on the defensive line. Came into Illinois, redshirted his freshman season. There was always the intention he'd play defense for them. And then flipped over to the offensive line, and he's played all over the offensive line for Illinois. And they have got better every single season that the guy has played for them. The running game has been progressively better. He's an extremely, extremely adept run blocker. He's got good skills in pass protection as well. Strong guy who can play offensive guard, can play center. So he's got that versatility that when you're looking at guys in the mid round. So I think you're talking about probably a third, fourth round now. People are starting to catch on to Kendrick Green, so he's not as much of a sleeper as he was at one point. But so you're probably talking third, fourth round guy who has got the versatility to play multiple positions on the line, which makes him extremely valuable. You know, you can get a guy who is probably going to start as a backup on your roster at that position. If he can play two places, that's one guy for two spots, which makes him incredibly valuable. He's durable as well. So if you think that NFL teams are looking at versatility and durability and availability, that's Kendrick Green ticks all those boxes on the offensive line. I'm a New England Patriots fan, and I would absolutely love
to see
every time.
That's brilliant. So he's a guy that I'd love to see. Playing for the Patriots. I think any team that is lucky enough to land Kendrick Green will make, if they make right use of him, will have a great player on their hands.
Yeah, I just want to touch on that, Ollie. Patriots wise, then, what do you think we're going to do in that first round?
So my latest mock draft for Pro Football Network, I don't normally do trades, but I'm so set and convinced that this crazy off-season splurge that the Patriots have had is pointing towards something similar in the draft. It would be so out of character for the Patriots, but I just think there's something coming. And it wouldn't surprise me to see the Patriots trade up to 8 if one of the top 5 quarterbacks is available. And I've sat and badmouthed Mac Jones a little bit. But I honestly could see him being a guy that Bill Belichick could take in for the Patriots and him be and have a successful career in New England.
Just say, I said that to Joe like 3 months ago.
Excellent. It's true. Excellent. It's just the way the Patriots offense is built now as well. There's the offensive line is so good. There's a lot of focus on the ground game. I'm presuming we'll take a running back at some point because there's that focus now on running the ball more than there ever was. And I just think Mac Jones, he's handed off to Najee Harris at Alabama quite successfully. Get Mac Jones in, get another decent wide receiver and a running back, and just try and recreate what he did at Alabama, just manage it and just return to a Super Bowl. So I think a trade up is coming. It'd be so out of character, but the free agency stuff's been so out of character that, you know, it would not surprise me.
Yeah, no, I could get behind that.
And I think it's Carolina, because you look, the Dolphins aren't going to trade with the Patriots. The Bengals aren't going to trade out of 5. Atlanta are taking calls, but I don't think they'll trade out. Detroit, potentially, but Carolina, I think, is the sweet spot for a team looking to move up significantly. So Patriots, Chicago Bears, Washington, that need a quarterback if they still want knocking around.
Very interesting you say that, as we have a giveaway to announce in just a moment, where it is guess the eighth pick. So you've given some of our listeners some ammo there. But you mentioned a defensive player as well for your sleepers.
Yeah. So Zach McPherson, a cornerback out of Texas Tech, and Big 12 defenders, especially cornerback, aren't particularly well-renowned just because the Big 12 has this reputation as being a non-defense or offense conference. But Zach McPherson was a four-star recruit out of high school who went to play for Penn State, spent time on special teams at Penn State, but as they brought in more top recruits, found that he wasn't going to be able to get the starting time that he wanted, entered the transfer portal, went down to Texas Tech, became an immediate starter, became an extremely productive ball hawk of a defensive back. His special teams ability as well is phenomenal. So he's a guy that's probably going to be, I don't know, fifth to sixth round, who can make plays for you on defense, can contribute on special teams, and just an all-round solid pick for me that people aren't talking about. And he's got a lot of experience as well, which you don't always get out of guys who haven't been 3 or 4 year starters, but he's got that special teams experience from Penn State. He's got 2 year starter experience at Texas Tech as a cornerback. I think he was first team all Big 12 last season, which for a cornerback at a program like Texas Tech, who even by the Big 12 standard are terrible defensively, I think he's got some solid potential in the NFL.
Sell me on new players. We have to look them all up. So final question we've got for you. Players from smaller universities that could have big pro careers, because obviously all the focus is drawn to Ohio State and Alabama and all this. You never really see the guys coming out of like the JUCOs and stuff.
Yeah, so last year was I'm going to take smaller schools and smaller universities as the FCS level rather than just a group of five teams, because there's a lot of successful guys that are going to come out of group of five level. I mean, Zach Wilson, for example, is essentially a group of five quarterback as an independent at BYU. So we're going to look at FCS guys, and we've mentioned Trey Lance, obviously, out of North Dakota State. His teammate, Dylan Reduns, the left tackle there, he's a guy that I can't see escaping the second round. Big, strong, mobile, athletic offensive tackle who has protected the blind side for Trey Lance and Easton Stick before him. So I think Dylan Reduns is going to be a guy you're looking at early on day two. If he lands in the right spot, he can have a long NFL career. Obviously, Quinn Miners, the center out of Wisconsin Whitewater, is a guy who's getting a lot of love at the moment. A massive guy, wore essentially a tank top to the Senior Bowl, played guard for Wisconsin Whitewater in Division II or Division III even, and but played exceptionally at center and guard at the Senior Bowl, really raised his stock. So he's a guy that is getting a lot of love, and I think people are talking about him being a top 50 pick from a guy that no one knew about prior to the season. So it'd be an incredible turnaround. Just keeping with the offensive lineman, you've got Spencer Brown, the right tackle out of the University of Northern Iowa, 6'8", offensive tackle who is athletic as hell. And at 6'8", it can go one of two ways with offensive linemen. The theory is that at that height, you've got great length, you're difficult to get around, but often you find that because they're so tall, the body control tends to lead to lunging a lot, which is not ideal from an offensive lineman. But he seems to have got it all together. And a small school guy who could probably go in the third or fourth round and start at right tackle for an NFL team, if not immediately, certainly within a couple of years. Really like Spencer Brown. And you and I are a small program who produces incredible athletes. They've got a defensive end called Ellison Smith, who's, again, in this class, who could be a pass rusher that maybe gets, again, third, fourth round attention from NFL teams because it's just got that athleticism that you want to see from guys flying off the edge. So I think he's a guy who is going to command a lot of attention. But the one guy that I am absolutely and totally ridiculously in love with at the FCS Division II level is Zach Davidson. He's a tight end slash punter out of Central Missouri. He an incredible story, a guy who didn't even play football, wasn't even considering playing football in high school, and just had been booming some kicks around there. The high school he attended, their punter went down. Coach shouts up, "Is anyone like? Can anyone punt a ball?" Zach Davidson goes in and he makes himself a career. A college career of being a punter, and the guy can boom it. We'll get on to what he can do as a tight end, but he's like the leg on the guy and accurate as well. You've got, I think, a 66-yard long punt and then a ridiculously large amount of punts down inside the 20-yard line. So we're talking about a guy who's an incredible punter who is now an All-American at Division II level tight end as well. He broke school records for receiving yards, touchdowns. Just an absolute beast. No other way of putting it. And it's 6'6" and a half, something like that. Ran a 40-yard dash at his pro day. So he's got decent athleticism for his size. Steady pair of hands. Pretty good route running for a guy that's coming out of a Division II level. And, you know, we spoke before about versatility, durability, ability. You got a guy on your team who can play tight end and punter. It's something that you don't see too much of in the NFL. And I think he's just signed an incredible rookie trading card deal as well. We had an email from one of his teams saying they just signed a first-of-a-kind trading card deal. So I think that's out there on Twitter if you want to go and have a look at that. But the guy is such an intriguing prospect. It would be great to see his name called.
Well, that versatility is obviously really useful. There's like a reason you don't use your star wide receiver as a punt returner, for example. Like, would you want him either A, to be your tight end and then maybe as a backup punter because you don't want your main responsibility in case he gets injured on the field? And likewise, what if your punter then just suddenly gets injured as a tight end?
So the interesting thing with that is at high school, obviously the size of him lent the team once he got sort of embedded in the team. He was a backup tight end, but they got to the point where they were like, they wouldn't use him as a tight end because he was that valuable as a punter.
Oh, wow.
So, but now I think the table's turned. I think the guy is going to be a late round tight end developmental tight end prospect. I'm sure of it.
And it's always helpful when you've got a player that can kick. I don't know if you guys have had a team where your kick has gone down.
Let's say that versatility and durability.
And so I do have a question we didn't really get talk about, but kind of how did you get into college football and scouting in general? Because it's such an interesting world, but especially kind of coming as a UK fan, it does feel like a lot of boundaries and gates to hop over to start getting into it.
Yeah, I think the same as a lot of people. I started, I got into the NFL. I didn't understand it. My brother was like, "Oh, come and watch a game, play some Madden." I was like, "I don't get it. I don't understand what's happening." Once you like understand the game a little bit, even like a small amount, it just like fascinated me. And so the natural progression there from getting into the NFL was to get into college football. But it turned out we were at a family party. And obviously over here, BT Sport carries college football. We didn't have BT Sport. We were at like family New Year's Eve party and the New Year's Six bowl games, like 2 o'clock in the morning, flicked it on. And like Boise State, I think, were playing. And it just blows me. And it blows me away that it's like 60, 70, 80, 100,000 people watching like college sports. And it's a fascinating thing. So we don't have that sort of thing over here. Like you can't explain it to people So I live in Derbyshire. So like the small, college up the road from us, Chesterfield, and like the next university, Sheffield University. Like I say to people, imagine those two playing each other, but you've got 100,000 people like screaming, shouting, roaring. The town closes down. Just there's so much. it's so much about college football, like the pride in it, the passion, the pageantry, and I think it's because obviously there's so few NFL teams that people in America naturally gravitate towards their colleges because it's the easiest way for them to access football. Just everything about it just blows my mind. So, and I got into covering it just, so UK website, 99 yards, looking for writers, saw a tweet, messaged Liz, who runs that website, and just said, look, I love football, never written a piece in my life, but I know you're looking for writers. Would you have me, sort of thing? And she said, send us a piece over. And 2 years later, that's what I do for a living. And it's, it's hard work. It's like a lot of hard work got into it, a lot of 4 o'clock getting up or 3 o'clock going to bed on the same day just to get up and write before work. But, you know, just think if you want something, put the time in and anything can happen.
Absolutely. And who do you support in college?
So I'm a Boston College fan. So stick with the Patriots, Boston College. But again, it's one of them, especially like when you come to this time of year, so many stories with guys, so many stories with like colleges and traditions and things. Like one of my favorite games, the Red River Rivalry, which is the rivalry game between Texas and Oklahoma, and just those sort of games that you kind of almost don't want to support a single team because you just want to sit back and enjoy it. And it's such a vast, vast sport that, you know, you sit and watch the MAC conference at 1 o'clock on a Wednesday morning, watching Miami of Ohio against Western Michigan. You know, there's something to find like all through the week, whenever you want it. There's storylines, there's action, and it's, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, man. I always keep trying to get into it, but it's just the times, man. anyone else got any questions we want to ask before we let Ollie go?
No, it was very in-depth coverage. So, yeah, all good.
Cheers. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to give any socials out so our listeners can give you a follow and see your pieces?
So write professionally for the Pro Football Network. So you can find them on Twitter at PFN365. Got a podcast of my own. It's three guys, me, George and Alex, of the College Chaps. So that's at the College Chaps. And then you can find the NFL draft prospect interviews that we've done through this cycle over on thetouchdown.co.uk.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on. Make sure everyone goes and has a check on Ollie's stuff. It is really interesting. Thank you for coming on, and I hope you enjoy the draft.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, guys.
So that was our interview with Ollie. Thanks so much, Ollie, coming on. Make sure you go check his stuff out. You can find us all on our social medias. We actually have a very exciting giveaway coming out this week for the draft. Isn't that right, Tim?
It is indeed. Our friends at EP Sports are giving away a NFL team T-shirt and lanyard. All you have to do is tell us which player will be picked at number 8 in the draft. Not which team will pick them, just the name of the player. And all the people that correctly predict that will be put in a draw and we'll decide the winner.
Okay, so yeah, make sure you go over to our Twitter and whatnot to check that out. Speaking of our Twitter and whatnot, Joe, what are they?
Yeah, so they are at TAFS_UK on Twitter and Instagram. And our Facebook is That's American Football Show. And I also have our Facebook group, which is NFL Fans, which you'll be able to find on our Facebook page as well.
Do not forget that we now are on YouTube. Craig has become a small media wizard. And so we are now getting on YouTube. So please do go check us out there, subscribe and like whatever you watch. Likewise, wherever you are listening, we do appreciate you giving us any feedback, even if it isn't 10 out of 10. Let us know what we could do better and let us know where you're listening from. Make sure you go check out Lockdown Lids as well. They've started to get pumped some really good stuff on there. So if you are looking for some good NFL merch, signed stuff, go check out their raffles.
I think they've got an Adrian Peterson signed full-size helmet.
Oh, it's a black helmet as well, isn't it?
Yeah, which I'll pop up somewhere around here. And then I've got a CD Lamb signed Dallas Cowboys Chrome Mini, I think was the other one, which is also quite nice. The Chrome does look good. It sort of pings really well in the light. So, some good stuff.
You could pop that one up here.
Yeah, I'll pop it. Yeah, down that
way. We could start doing that now.
Yeah.
But thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you head over to EP Sports as well and check out them for your NFL and equipment needs. And we will see you after the draft.